my journey with postpartum anxiety or panic disorder, you know, with my son's birth. Well, I've overcome it. That's why I can sit here and laugh about it now. I wasn't laughing then.
Yes.
But when you put me and, let's say, five other women that have a postpartum type of issue, then all of a sudden, a little bit of my resiliency or my resolve carries over. You make friendships. You know, human brain is designed for connection. And the minute that we have that connection, there's this sense of relief and this partnership and like, you know, with sisterhood, right? And suddenly that pain becomes a little bit more bearable. Absolutely. And so that's why I'm so about this woman right now.
Let me tell you, I've been with Nami for 21 years and I tell people all the time, I started off as a mom.
Yeah.
I get the pleasure to serve as executive director now, but in the beginning, I was just like any other mom who was terrified, felt completely responsible for the position I was in.
Yeah.
I felt all the blame, shame, and guilt you can imagine.
Yeah.
Something was wrong with my son. I didn't know what it was. We were going from doctor to doctor to doctor, and they would say, oh, what a handsome little boy. Oh, what a well-behaved. I didn't want to hear that.
Yeah.
I wanted to know what's wrong.
Yeah.
And what did I do to make this happen? And so, so what happens then is you're traumatized because your family, who you normally would depend on, you feel so much blame and shame.
Yeah.
Your family, even when they try to help you. I remember my husband, in my own grief, I dyed my hair blonde. I think half of it fell out, only in the back, of course. And then he asked me one night, what are we having for dinner? And I said, pot roast. And he goes, oh, we have pot roast again? And you would have thought he had said, I want a divorce. Because that's how I responded. You know, I was an emotional mess.
Oh, yeah.
But that is the case whenever there's a trauma in a family. Mm-hmm. So one thing I didn't say about Nami, all of our classes, all of our support groups are peer led. That means the teachers, the facilitators, and even the presenters for our awareness events, they are all people who either have a diagnosis and they're in recovery or their parents who have been there, done that, got the t-shirt. So that first day I stepped into a NAMI Anything, which was a class, I was there with 22 other parents in the same sufferable boat. And the two teachers at the front of the room, their child was in their 20s, but had, you know, significant diagnosis of bipolar disorder. And I thought, wow, if they could do it, and they can talk about it and then get to this place where they're still married.
Yeah.
then maybe I can.
Yeah.
And so now I've been married 29 years and all three of our children ended up. So autism is a spectrum disorder. Mm-hmm. So I have one son, that son, who was 2 years later diagnosed with autism because he was only 4 at the time.
Okay.
And then I have two other children, one identified in the first grade and the other identified in the seventh grade as being somewhere with bipolar disorder. But when you're that young, they don't, or at least back then, they didn't call it bipolar.
You shouldn't.
No.
It was, they came under the flagship of ADHD. And
to catch all.
And they had significant neurological disorder. So I encourage any parent that sees that their child has a behavioral health disorder, go to a neurologist and get a full battery, a full individual evaluation.
Yeah.
That's what they call it, an FIE.
Yeah.
Get a full individual educational evaluation to see what part of that neurology is being impacted.
Mm-hmm.
So my son with autism has, the reason he didn't speak for 7 years, he had auditory processing disorder. He had speech impairment, but he also had executive function disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And with the right intervention, that gets better. He talks now. I had put my phone on mute. He's going to call me promptly at 11 o'clock every day. He calls me at 11 o'clock and wants to make sure that his lunch is going to be on time. And then
I love that.
And then no matter what, it's never been late, but every day we have to have that conversation.
Oh.
And so my other two children, the youngest one has olfactory processing disorder, which means he can be triggered and really get stressed out and angry and very, very difficult based on the smell of a room, of a building, of a place. So he isolates, or if we go into a restaurant that has anise, he smells it immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And this, like the fall kitchens have that prevalent. And so he's very sensitive to the smell of rice, which is bizarre to me. But because I know this
And he also has visual processing disorder. But if you only hear ADHD, if you mm-hmm. only get a test from someone who's not doing an MRI, mm-hmm. not doing a PET scan, not doing the genetic questionnaire, yeah. you know, over, you know, your family history, then you're not going to get a full picture of what's going on with the kid. And all you'll see is behavior. Now, translate that to an adult. Because the majority of people, 50% of all adult cases of mental illness that are chronic mm-hmm. are identifiable between ages 14 and 24. So mm-hmm. we know yeah. that somewhere between those two ages, 75% of all lifelong cases are identified by age 24. So we know that it's going to show up during those school years or that transitional mm-hmm. age yeah. from high school into college. So since we know that, helping families understand what the signs and symptoms are, yeah. what to look out for, and where to get help, even if no insurance yeah. is there. Or mm-hmm. if you have a husband like me who said, there is nothing wrong with my son.
And don't you touch that money in the bank, because I wanted to clean out the bank account yeah. and go get every test done. And he said, yes. no, he'll grow out of it. Well, that's grief, you know. Yeah. So what we know, and you touched on it already,
relational trauma is best healed relationally, right? Mm-hmm. Relational trauma, what does that mean? You're mad at the dog, the cat, your husband, your parents, the mm-hmm. other kids in the house, because this one kid yeah. or even your brother, sister, or parent, someone is in crisis. So that messes up your relationships with everybody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And in order to heal mm-hmm. that relational trauma, it's best to do it in a group mm-hmm. where you can use the power of relationship, right, mm-hmm. to heal. Wow. Because people need people. We're wired to connect.
That is so mm-hmm.
And if you can't find love and laughter and peace here, then it doesn't mean throw the baby out with the bathwater. Yeah. It just means mm-hmm. get your cup filled through your relationship.
And one person just doesn't cut it. When yeah. you have the complexity of being taking care of your own mental health
yeah.
and then your kid has a challenge. I mean, imagine, you know, and then you got a relationship to maintain where you are maybe on the two different sides of the solution.
Yes.
So you need someone or someone's, you yes. know, the whole
multiple
versions. Especially in our mm-hmm. cultures. Like yeah. we are so bad about owning it. You know, we stop yeah. going to parties because yeah. we are ashamed. We start lying about the situation. Mm-hmm. You have no idea how many Middle Eastern, Indian, Pakistani family situations I've run into where they're in their late 20s and kind of far gone, like a schizophrenic person who never got medicated at 27, mm-hmm. which wow. you could have like slowed down the disease process. Yes. You could have given them quality of life, and then make it worse. They married the person off without informing, yeah. you know, yeah. what the other partner is getting into. Like so many messes that yeah. are.
And then children come into play.
Yeah.
And once that happens, now you've got generational.
Yeah.
So yeah. what we see in our classes, and I love it when I see this, you'll see two fiancés and then both sides of the family, their parents. Or in mm-hmm. the Latino community, you'll see multiple generations. And we really...
it's like, we all need to hear this.
We all need to hear this.
We all live in the same house.
Yeah. And so what we absolutely do, we separate the person diagnosed. That class is called peer-to-peer from the family class, which is called family-to-family. And they don't always appreciate that at first. But mm-hmm. then if we get them into the first, second class, they begin to understand.
Yeah.
You have the freedom to say, I hate it when he does da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
Where if mm-hmm. you said that and he or she is sitting in the room, that can be condemning. It can mm-hmm. slow down treatment.
Yeah.
It takes 8 to 11 years for people to seek professional help, even, and this is across the board,
yeah.
regardless of culture or background,
yeah.
8 to 11 years, even when they know there's a problem,
oh, wow.
because of the stigma. It's mm-hmm. it's the, we consider people living with mental illness as low IQ, low cognitive, mm-hmm. when that is so far
brilliant.
From the show. They're brilliant.
Yeah.
They're smarter than you.
Yeah.
And then we see that we call them crazy, which is stigmatizing by itself.
Mm-hmm.
We see them as dangerous.
are criminal minded, and all of those things can be so far from what's really happening.
Yeah.
But because we get our information from cinema,
self-diagnosis, you know,
misinformation, right?
Misinformation, yeah. Or even sensational news, right? So many times when there's an interview like this, right, it's something incredible that has happened. And if mental illness is involved, people say, see, that's why I don't want to be called bipolar or labeled. And if it's a child, parents think that if they get a diagnosis, then they cut off the child's future, when the opposite is true. The earlier you put a child in the driver's seat of their recovery and teach them that it's not it doesn't have to be debilitating. It's just you're different, right? And because of those differences, you, before anyone, has to know how to avoid your triggers, and you have to be able to communicate that. And so that's the only blessing that I had with having children diagnosed, all three, in elementary school. People say, oh, that's so sad. I'm like, no. Would you rather work next door in a cubicle to someone who knows?
Yeah.
And they're treating their diagnosis? Yeah. Or would you like to work or drive down the freeway with somebody who doesn't know?
Exactly.
And, numbing, like with drugs and alcohol
or
so
anger.
You keep mentioning bipolar because that is one that gets a lot of movies, right? Yeah. One of my favorite clients, I know you shouldn't have favorites, but back when I was at Devro, and I actually was part of a schizophrenic unit for 18 to 22-year-olds. Mm-hmm. And that's typically when they bloom, right? When the disease blooms. Yeah. Unless you do marijuana and you accelerate the disease and it comes on a much earlier age. This girl was adopted from a Russian orphanage and had a very rough transition into adolescence. Ironically, the family was very educated, you know, living in the best part of Western California, and sister went on to become, like, she went to an Ivy League school. Her bipolar got so bad that, you know, she became self-harming, and so that's why she was sent to us, because we were inpatient residential, so we kept our kiddos for 18 months and made sure they got their diploma and got a handle on their mental illness before we let them go. And I was very naive and young. I was only like 23 years old. This was my first job, and she was one of my first patients. And I remember those earlier conversations. Even people who worked around me were like, oh my God, late adoption. You know, probably the mom had like drug issues, like hopeless, right? Like they kind of wrote her off. And I'm like, there's something I just love about this girl. And I wasn't a mom yet. I tell my kids I was a mom way before I was a mom. And we just, you know, we talk. I'd make her Persian tea. Aww. She taught me how to like crochet. And the reason I'm sharing this is how important it is.
Yeah.
Where you are and who you talk to when you're going through a really rough time.
Yeah.
This has been like 16 years, like years and years went by. She now has three children. When she bought her first home in California, which probably I couldn't even afford, but she called me first.
Oh.
When she got pregnant, she called me. She still sends me pictures of her family, her kids, and then she always keeps saying, like, you know, look how it turned out. Because I would say, if you know how bad it went in your own childhood, you know exactly what not to do.
Yes.
You know? And so, I'm getting
you're making me cry.
But that is like, such because from a clinical lens, she had one of the scariest type of bipolar, like already self-harmed, you know, inpatient setting, a couple of arrests, like horrible picture, right? And now if you look at her,
you would
not know her pain points because she healed them. And I love that you're calling those healing circles.
Yeah, healing circles.
I love it because that is so
on point.
Yeah. So healing circles is really very new to NAMI and distinct from our traditional family support group and peer programs. We call it connections.
Okay.
Because, and healing circles were born during the pandemic because more and more people, we have a warm line where you can just call and ask us anything. Right?
Okay.
And it's peer run. So people in recovery answer the phone. So there's no shame. And as a matter of fact, when people start stuttering and not really calling a spade a spade, they'll share a little piece of their story and it totally relaxes the, and then they get more honest, about what's going on.
Yeah.
And so, what was I saying? So the healing circles were created because the calls began to increase. And guess what? They weren't diagnosed. These were not people who were traditionally in a mental illness track like we were accustomed.
Yeah.
And they didn't want to die. So they weren't calling us for referral to a doctor. They weren't looking for a diagnosis. And as a matter of fact, we were scaring off the moms because they were like, no, she just has a little anxiety. She's just, but because of what we know, we were like, no, you need to, but they weren't ready.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Understanding. How do they say the teacher will appear when the student is ready or vice versa?
Yeah.
When the student is ready, the teacher appears. So they weren't ready. So healing circles are a type of support group.
Okay.
But we're not looking for anything. And we started this at the Rupani Foundation with moms that were Afghani.
But
you know what? Everything was in one room. And boy, we had like three different translators because there was no one language that was going to fit. There was no one person that could speak all the languages. So we had intermediaries retranslating for other people in the room. But all of these were moms.
Yeah.
And that's where my heart, because I came to this work. No one ever like says, I don't know, maybe you're a counselor or a therapist or
a
psych. I'm not sure exactly what you're
I don't know what
is.
I am anymore.
But you signed up.
Bit
for
of everything.
But she said, I'm going to school. This is what I want to do. But the family members are not voluntarily signing up for it.
Yeah.
And your house becomes a psychiatric center. Your bedroom becomes the therapist room. You become a counselor, whether you want to or not.
Yeah.
And you have to become a public
advocate
as well.
Yeah.
When I would go to different school districts with my children, because all three, hello, barrel of monkeys.
Yeah.
So whenever I go to a different school setting, I would first say, okay, what type of knowledge and understanding? I remember the first time I transferred to a school, the transfer art was done one-on-one. They said, just sign this piece of paper with no understanding of what the eligibilities were, no understanding of what program came with the child.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, are you really asking me? Are you sure?
Yeah.
Are you confident enough in your job to ask me to sign this paper with no stay put rule, with no? And that's when I recognized, you know what? The districts are charged to do things outside of just academic training and education that they don't have the knowledge or the legal expertise to do.
Mm-hmm.
So what I started doing, especially if I went to a new district, I would just ask for the special ed chair or representative of the special ed director of the district to be in my meeting. Because without that, and with so many complex cases, because I had two in 504 and one in full special ed, I said, if we don't do this right before day one, there's going to be some things not captured. And so they were like,
is that called IEPs?
Mm-hmm. IEPs.
Yeah. Individualized education programs.
Okay.
So my kiddos were all mostly from California and they were like light years ahead of Texas on mental health.
Yeah. Well, I don't, you know, good thing I don't know about other states, but I do know this about Texas.
Yeah.
We ranked 51st. In the country on what we spend per capita on adults living with mental illness. That's adults, but you can imagine children are probably lagging as well.
Yeah.
Now I have to admit, sitting on this advisory committee with TEA, they're doing
we're gonna change that
to catch up.
Yeah. Yeah,
adult services are really still pretty low. What are adult services? Well, you have to live, laugh, and love, right? How do you live, laugh, and love?
Yeah.
What I mean by that is, how do you have significant work? How do you take care of your daily function and enjoy satisfying relationships? Well, you do that by having a place to work or volunteer,
medication, clean housing, right? And access to healthcare to support. We have so many people that cannot afford the injectionables.
They're so good. They're so good. For like even Risperdal, remember how expensive?
What was it? Focalin.
So some of the more severe spectrums of mental illness, which are usually like schizoaffective or schizophrenia, where they have severe cognitive impairment and they require antipsychotics. And antipsychotics were some of the most expensive medications market for the... That's what you really need.
Yes.
I mean, I hear you say cognitive impairment, but sometimes even with absolute sheer brilliance, if you don't know what's real and not real, it doesn't matter how smart you are because you can't overcome the reality check. Yeah. But you're right. Yeah. And in Vega, to me, I'm not supposed to say a drug. I'm sorry. But some of the...
No one's sponsoring this, but...
Yeah, exactly.
But there's certain drugs that would just really capitalize on the problem, but not help the most people that need it.
I just wish that there was more that could be done, especially for those that are underprivileged and need these medications.
Here, there's two things that I think could be done really easily. It doesn't take a lot of money. Psychoeducation is a game changer.
Yes.
Understanding best practices at home.
Yeah.
Best practices with your extended family and maybe even with your community of faith. I know in churches that I've been at, I've had to up the education of the community that I'm worshiping in just so that they don't, especially when they were growing up, my children, so that they would not reward the negative behavior that I'm working with the IEP to stop because it's so cute. It's only cute when they're six. Yeah. When they're 16, 26, 36, it's no longer cute.
Yeah.
And so you have to like put the train on the track very, very early. And you want as many people who love you to be a part of that plan. The other thing is you got to know what to, if you only get that 15 minutes once a month or once every other month with the psychiatrist or the therapist, then you go in with what you want to leave with. You start with, how does Steve Covey say it? Start with the end in mind. Don't walk in there chatting about, and art committees are equal because you only have so much time in an art meeting at your child's school. Yeah. That also applies to higher education, which is college. So you want to be an effective advocate. You have to know the language. Yeah. You have to know the law. And I can hear your brain turning. You're like, well, how do you know all of that?
Yeah.
How do you get all that? You get it in bite-sized pieces. You get it? You can't know it. You can't know anything no one ever told you.
Yeah.
And you can't know it all at once.
True.
But you can learn it. Yeah. You can learn through these psychoeducation. And then used experience is the best experience. And the support, people call the office and they'll say, I'm picking a place.
Yeah.
I live in Jersey Village. Where can I find a good counselor for XYZ? And I said, you know what? I can give you the people that we have on our list and send you the list that we have. But you want to know where the best recommender is? I said, we have a support group in Jersey Village. And they meet on the first and third Wednesday of the month. Why don't you go to that meeting, stand up, and ask that same question?
That's awesome.
You're going to get all of these parents tell you everything that I don't know.
because they went through it.
They went through it, right?
Oh, wow.
And I tell people all the time, use experience. Find out. Also, read books written by people who are diagnosed with what you're diagnosed with or a loved one. Because that gives you, and read multiple, don't read one.
Yeah.
Because it gives you this trajectory of how far a person, what the possibilities are.
Yes.
And above all, get rid of what you want. Right? I have a good friend. She says, travel in the direction that the horse is already going. You know, if you go...
There's a reason for it, you know?
If you go... So I have a son who made over 1,300 on the SAT, bipolar disorder. Mm-hmm. He took the test 12 times. Well, I don't want to say he took it. He would walk into the building, then he'd walk out, you know?
Yeah.
One time he took the test... And he paid $25 to the college board to cancel the scores before he ever took, because he was so worried that it wasn't perfect. Oh. He made over 1,300 when he took the SAT. He had a very higher than his mother. and so he got all of these offers to college. He finally picked one. He went the first day and he says, I can't do it. I'll just sleep in my car. I said, okay, why don't you come home and just... we'll give you a gap year. Well, that gap year has been 3 years. He has since opened 2 businesses. He is certified in everything you can possibly be certified in to be a building inspector, both private, residential, and commercial. He is the captain of his own ship. Mm-hmm. And now he's going back for his engineering management degree.
Yeah.
But he's going to do it like Frank Sinatra, his way. Mm, okay. He's taken all the CLEP courses he can take, and then
we're going to take a real quick break. Listeners, we're going to take a real quick break. You are listening to 99.5 FM, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to 99.5 FM. You are listening to the Chai Time Girls. And for those of you that have just tuned in, we are in conversation with Miss Angela Hudson and Mehtab on mental health awareness, illnesses, and stigmas. Mm-hmm. So, where were we? The education system?
Well, I kind of want to repeat what you said about autism being a brain disorder versus a...
Oh, sure. Yeah. So I want to be
good
clear.
Point that was.
NAMI does support families dealing with autism. However, autism is not considered a mental illness. Autism is considered a brain disorder. So here's how it goes. All mental illnesses are brain disorders, but not all brain disorders are mental illness. Like you can have dementia, Alzheimer's. That's not a mental illness, but it is a brain disorder.
Yeah.
Here's what I think is important for the public to know. And I learned this like in that very first class 21 years ago. Wow. It doesn't matter what you call it. I always wanted to know the correct label. I wanted an accurate diagnosis. The point of diagnosis is so that you understand what your treatment options are. Mm-hmm. But the issues that underlie both brain disorder, whether it's a stroke patient or a person with ADHD or bipolar schizophrenia, the issues are the same. There's going to be this stigma around the public thinking that the person is crazy, incompetent, low IQ, dangerous, criminal-minded, whatever. Mm-hmm. There's going to be very few services when they become an adult, where they live, where they work, where they live, laugh, and love. You'll be curious what to do when you die and they outlive you, which is your goal, right?
Yes.
And who's going to take care of them? All of those issues are the same regardless of the diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And that's where NAMI steps in. NAMI helps you find a way out of no way. Mm-hmm. I was sharing with Mehtab earlier that if money could have done it, I'd be broke, but we all be healed, right? But money was not the answer.
Yeah.
Money could never, that was never going to be the fix. And you can ask any person who has poured thousands of, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands into their treatment because they had it. That was never going to be the fix. Yeah. You know, my mom, she still looks for new therapies for autism. And she tells me how this one did well and that one did well because they found the perfect school or the perfect treatment. And here's the thing. I always wanted my son to talk. And then he finally started talking. And now that he's 26, guess what? He still has autism. So there's pieces of it that you have to embrace. It's a person with psychosis, they have psychosis.
Yeah.
Can they still get married, have children, live a life that they're proud of, decide not to have children, still live a life that they're proud of? Yes, but you have to find a way. Yeah. And finding that way only comes through education. You learn what the illness is. It's the biopsychosocial approach. I'm surprised I hadn't said that already. Bio is understanding how the brain is impacted. What is the diagnosis? What is the prognosis? Mm-hmm. What does it look like on other people? But then the psycho is get educated enough to see how it affects you. There is a limit. I remember talking to a dad and he was like, my son is coming out of the hospital and I need to find XYZ. I said, okay, you're going to find XYZ, but let me tell you what you really want to know. How much are you willing to do?
Mm-hmm.
What are you willing? How far are you? Your son's what, 42? How much are you willing to do?
Yeah.
Find out that that's your journey. Your journey is not so much him, because it's going to be what it's going to be.
Yeah.
The journey is for you. You want to feel good about yours. That's the psychoeducation. Social, find your people.
Yes.
Find the people that are not going to lay on blame, shame, and guilt, criticize you, tell you what you should have done. You married the wrong man. You married the wrong lady, whatever.
Your gene pool was bad.
If you had more money, whatever. You just, whatever. You know,
yeah.
Get rid of the blame, shame, and guilt and find the people that are going to love and support you in your journey. Many times for NAMI World, that's NAMI people. We have a state conference coming up in November here. It's going to be in Houston this year. So people will descend to Houston from all over the state that are walking this same journey and advocating for it, mm-hmm. teaching those classes, facilitating those support groups, and you'll get to see all the players that are really on your side. Oh, and that's another big misunderstanding. Nobody cares. There are more people for you than against you. You just don't know who they are.
Yeah. Talking to the wrong ones, maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So you got to find your people. And then find, and like you were saying earlier, you have to find a counselor or a therapist or someone, not only that you like if you're the family member or the loved one, but one that works for the... I remember someone gave my son a dollar, a Susan B. Anthony dollar, and said, isn't that pretty? You haven't seen one of those before. And he probably hadn't. But she said, I'll give you another one if you take your medicine and come back next month. And he came out to the car and he says, Mom, I make $300 a week. And I'm like, I know you do. Just thank you for being polite. He says, you know, I'm not going back. I said, yes, I kind of figured that. But you have to, you have, that person has to find the right person for them and the right. Because if they're going to be in the driver's seat of their recovery, they have to put together a, I call it a gumbo, but they have to put together a whole plan that they can achieve successfully to support them. And the biggest thing that, that triggers people into relapse is stress.
Or so, being rushed, you know,
and that's stress.
Sometimes working with like other clinicians, they felt like their client's progress was somehow related to them. Whereas they're like, oh, you're so relaxed. You're just laughing in there with your clients. I'm like, because it's their process. And if you make a kid laugh, they're relaxed, they're going to learn and retain more of what you teach them.
Neuroplasticity does not exist.
Or sometimes I take the teenagers and just walk the campus, and then we go to Starbucks, and I'm like, you know, they would, my kiddos would not be ashamed to tell me they had a bad weekend. I'm like, did you make any stories for me? Because I made some stories this weekend. You know, and we would just, I don't know. It's like you hold space for the human story, you know? Yeah. Like, everyone, if you're not saying you're crazy, you're lying. Like, everyone has something that's not going well. At some point.
Absolutely.
Right? So, like, with my daughter, she's so cute. She works at Starbucks and she's a junior in high school. So one of the things I'm concerned about is just the scary numbers with teen suicides.
Yeah.
So I tell both my kids, I got one in middle school, one in high school. Like, if you ever notice, you know, your friend, he just doesn't look the same or they're withdrawing, you know, they usually be like kind of bubbly and anything that's off, I call it the baseline.
Yeah.
Like, check in with them as a friend, right? Say, how are things going with you? One time my daughter was getting bullied and I kind of explained, like, I use psychoeducation with her. And instead of hating the girl, she's like, Mom, when you're packing my lunch, can you make it 2 sandwiches and 2 Cheetos and 2 apples? And I'm like, you barely eat the one I pack you. Mom, remember that girl that was mean to me and she pushed me off the bench? Like, her mommy's boyfriend is hitting her and she's running out of money and she comes to school hungry. And I'm like, okay, here's 5 sandwiches.
But
when you teach your kids to be inquisitive, or I got a text last night from her. She's like, I'm on my shift and this person, they're struggling. So look for this text. And I said, you know, even if they're a teenager, so, and I run into this, the parents, they're like, no, there's nothing wrong with you. You're being drama queen. Well, the next thing you know, the kid's dead. And then you're going to learn how depression works. Like, depression is untreated. Suicide is untreated depression.
Yeah.
As much medications we have in the market, you can get like even for $4 a month at Walmart.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, no one should be dying of depression.
You hit the nail on the head when you said hold space, check in with people. That's what healing circles are. That's all they are.
Yeah. The whole space.
The whole space. But we have to train one another how to do that. And there's a couple of videos on YouTube that I share with people on how to demonstrate empathy, which is holding space. right?
Yeah.
One is that Brene Brown, empathy. Yeah, it's like 3.5 minutes.
Okay.
If it has a bear and a fox, that's the right one. I don't know the name of it, but I know it's Brene Brown, and it's a little cartoon. And then, and it's a very good way of showing people what not to do and what to do.
Yeah.
And then the second one is very short, and it has been the most impactful video I've showed my children. It's Not About the Nail. That's the name of it.
It's not about the nail.
Mm-mm. And it's 1.5 minutes.
Okay.
Of this guy trying to fix it.
We can't fix it.
And it's so funny. And so I showed it to my children. And so I'm in the car, and they're in the back seat. And my son is going on and on about something. I don't really remember. It was some years ago. And my daughter kept giving him these things to do. Or what he should. You should.
Yeah.
Should.
Yeah. And he goes, Olivia.
I'm done.
He's like, it is not about the nail. And when he said it's not about the nail, I thought, you really learned that.
Yeah,
and they were little. They were like middle school age at that time. And so even children can learn how to hold space, how to have empathy. But I think it's just like the airplane. You have to put the oxygen mask on the parents first. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't necessarily have to be both of them.
Yeah.
But it needs to be the one.
Yeah.
You know how in one, every relationship, there's the one.
The one, yes. The one.
It's not always the woman.
No.
We like to hold that banner up. It's always the mom. It's not always the mom. But whoever's the one should put that oxygen mask on first so that they have the stamina, the understanding, the resilience themselves to be what they need to be for the family. Mm-hmm. And then self-care, you know, because you'll burn out too. I remember in 2019, before COVID hit, I was so proud. Every month, I was in another state.
Wow.
And it doesn't matter if it was one day or 2 days or a week.
I love that.
Because that just reset button for me. I love travel.
Yes.
So then I would come back home and I'm like, okay, what you got now?
We actually have a girls trip that's going to come up soon. So we're
You need it. You, COVID kind of put a kibosh on that, right?
Yeah.
So now we're starting. And in all honesty, the same thing with our support groups. We are just now opening up all our in-person groups again. People got used to
isolating
virtual, but it's not the same.
Yeah,
it's the nonverbal language.
Like Virginia said, the 80% of communication that you're missing out on, right?
You're missing it. And that connection.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that connection.
Yeah.
So we've got some trainings coming up. Here's what it is. NAMI has maybe 8 full-time staff members. And we serve 3 counties. The work, if it was the staff, we'd be gone forever. Because you'll never have enough clinicians to serve everybody on the wait list.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with NAMI psychoeducation and support groups. If we had to pay everyone, we would not have been around for 34 years.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have volunteers. It's all a volunteer, grassroots organization.
Mm-hmm.
People who've been there, done that, got the t-shirt, but were then helped. They found successful intervention.
Mm-hmm.
They come back and say, okay, I can help some people, you know. And they may stay on for 2 years or 5 years. We still have some 20-year chippers out there. But we need more.
Yeah.
One of the things that happened with the pandemic was people decided, you know, I've been doing this for 15 years. Maybe I should do something else.
Mm-hmm.
So we've lost quite a few of our veteran volunteers who actually moved away, went to go live closer to grandchildren, that kind of thing. And I'm not mad at them. I just had my first grandbaby. I understand. I didn't understand priorities. So we need volunteers who are interested in moving the needle to become support group facilitators, to become our psychoeducation teachers.
How do they become?
And we do the training.
Okay.
So you just go to our website, you hit that button that says volunteer. It'll ask you a few questions. And the why? Why ask me these questions? Because our programs are peer-led. So we're trying to figure out, why do you want to do this?
Yeah.
Usually people have a reason. Either it's them and they're in recovery, but nobody would ever know it. Or they have a family member or a sister or a sibling of some sort or a parent. They have some neighbor, a church member, and they've been a part of that journey.
Yeah.
And they want to give back on a larger scale. So we ask those questions to figure out what's your commitment to our people. Because one of the things, but the rest of it we train. So these are national signature programs, research are evidence-based, medically reviewed every 2 years. Mm-hmm. And I guess one of the easiest ways to get to know us now, NAMI put out his first book. It's called You're Not Alone. Well, I don't even have a copy of it here.
You're Not Alone.
But it's called You're Not Alone. It's on Amazon.com. The first half of the book, the medical director, Dr. Ken Duckworth, who assembled the book, he answers all these questions. He's been doing this for over 20 years. Mm-hmm. So he took the most prevalent questions and had the answers from all of the scientists and doctors and whatever, you know, put in this. And they all contributed to the answers of those prevalent questions. That's the first half. Mm-hmm. The second half of the book is anecdotal.
I love stories
of families. So somewhere in those pages, if you swim around, you'll find, you know, a situation similar to either yours or someone you know. And I
That's
tell
important.
People, yeah, someone you know.
Yeah.
And I tell people, look, if you buy the book and it doesn't apply to you, give it to someone.
Yeah.
That is how you get people to get help. How do you tear down stigma? How do you get people to seek out help? You talk about it in a non-shaming way. Yeah. You get real with people.
Yeah.
You know? I hate, you know, one of the stigmatizing words is crazy, right? But I think it depends on how you say it.
Context, because
in my house, we use the word, but no, everybody knows in our house that we're the anti-stigma people.
Yeah.
So I think as long as you talk to people in love and support and you're very genuine, I think you can say, look, I think your thinking is a little not right. You know, we need to have coffee. You know? And then schedule a time. You know, but to shame a person in front of a group of people, or even to say people, I've always said this, don't tell someone, I think you need a psychiatrist, because even with all the earnestness in the world, that's not going to work. And above all, don't give up. So if it's you and you've not found the people who care, you've not found, you know,
keep looking
and call NAMI.
Yes.
Keep looking and call NAMI, because we've got people sitting by the phone.
And you don't have to have all the answers.
Yeah.
No.
But you can listen with the intention to understand.
Yeah.
And I cannot emphasize this enough. Have humor.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes I'll be with the client, I'm like, okay, oh, I took 10 minutes of our time. It looks like you're getting a big discount. You know? And they love that. They love that I'm just as crazy
genuine.
As they
are.
I love that. You know, through these shows that we've done over the past 5.5 years now, I've learned so much. And I go back home and I teach my kids the same thing. And I have a story for you guys. So the other day, my little one, she's a third grader, she comes home and she goes, a friend of mine was sitting by herself on the swing, and she looked sad. So I was like, so what did you do? She goes, oh, I just went up to her and, you know, said if she wanted to play and if she wanted to talk. And I was like, you did? And what did she do? She's like, yeah, she grabbed my hand and we went and played in the playground, and she was happy again. Just that little, you know, and so we always have conversations. Love. Yes.
And at that age, you can go from one mood to the next, like literally one playground.
Yes. But I was just so touched, because she didn't have to do it, but she saw a girl sitting there by herself and she felt the need to go and talk to her. And I feel like that is because of my conversations with her, through the conversations I've had with people like you guys. So I've learned so much and grown so much in that way, passing it on to my kids, you know? So
yeah.
Thank you.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
And it's meant to pass it. Like sometimes people say, you do so much stuff for free, you just give it away. I'm like, what, am I going to die with it?
Yeah.
You know,
all this knowledge.
What you have, you should share.
Absolutely.
Because that's how you make an impact. It's not like I'm going to talk to this many clients or she's going to do one class. It's the impact,
the exponential
collective.
Yeah.
And the language, right?
Yes.
There's so much empowerment in language. Going up to someone who's struggling and just like disrupting the awkwardness for that person.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean,
just being there.
Yeah.
I want to, I don't want us to leave without me mentioning that NAMI does this once a year event to
really tear down stigma, and it's growing every year. Last year, we had a little over 2,000 people, and we didn't know what to expect because of COVID. We had shut down this event, and then our first year back, it was like, woof. And it's our NAMI walk.
Yes.
So NAMI does walks all over the country. And initially, I tell people I started walking because, and I was bad at it too. I could barely make it. It was only 3.3 kilometers, but I hadn't been like really active in a while. And so it was all I could do to just make it back to my truck. I didn't say bye to anybody. I would walk that 3.3 kilometers and I would make it back to my vehicle, pull off my shoes, drag myself home. I was trying to look like I was all fit, but I was horrible out there on the, and but that was when I started. And I started going because of my son. People say that kiddos with autism don't like people and they like quiet places, and my kid loves people. Mm-hmm. He doesn't care that his speech is still kind of like not quite conversational. Mm-hmm. And he'll just say, look at me, you know. And then he'll say, talk to me.
Yeah, like, I love that.
Hi, how you doing? You know, he knows what to do, but he likes his way better. He goes to the NAMI walk every year and he feels accepted. He feels understood, even though I still have to explain to some people. And there's a swing set that's sturdy enough for his adult size. So you'll see this guy with a beard and a mustache and a bald head swinging like he's five years old. But he goes to that walk every year because he feels like, oh, these are my people, you know? And it is the one time I don't have to be with him. I'm not hovering. Yeah. I'm not really worried. There's a lot of officers there. The officers not only pull duty to cover this walk for security purposes, mm-hmm. but they have a mental health unit. Wow. And a majority of these officers, whether they're on duty or that day or not, they're there. And I remember looking up last year, and they had made a perimeter because it's a big, you know, Sam Houston Park has these little areas in the back, and they were all there, and they don't charge us for that. They come on because they support the mental health and the advocacy of this community. Hospitals, doctors, what do you call those? Pharmaceutical companies. Yeah. So I tell parents, if you have a question and you don't want to deal with the red tape of making an appointment or you've been on hold and people are not answering the phone, I say come to the walk because the CEO of all these hospitals is there.
Yeah.
And they will answer any question because they're there with a t-shirt and tennis shoes and shorts on, and it's not so official.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And you can get people's phone number and business cards. But I walk now for the families that are coming still wide-eyed and don't know exactly what they're going to do. I used to walk for me. I used to walk for my son. But now I walk for the greater good of the community. And so we're going to do it again on May 20th. There is no cost for this walk. You know how some walks you have to pay a registration?
Yeah.
We do ask that people register so we'll know how many people came.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's how I know we had over, because like 1,600 people registered. But I know there was over 2,000 people at the park. You could just see it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But we ask people register so we get better numbers of how we're growing every year. And if you want to, you can support the walk by having a virtual team and not an actual walk team.
Okay.
So like the walk teams tend to raise money. Like they'll ask their friends and family. Like we have a lot of nursing teams. So they get everybody from their nursing unit, our teacher team or whatever, professors, whatever, join. But if you don't actually walk, you can still just have a virtual walk.
Okay.
And all of those funds, I can guarantee you 100% goes towards opening up new support groups, opening up new classes. We do not charge anyone for our services. And if you're a volunteer and we pay for you to go get trained somewhere, we don't charge.
Okay.
But that's how we cover
build
it.
Build a team.
Wow. We do this through the annual walk.
Wow. Well, thank you so much.
The time has just flown, and I am
sorry for overtime.
No, you're good.
This is good information.
Yes, good information. Thank you both for joining us here on Chai Time. I mean, we love all the information that you guys have shared with us. And May 27th?
It's May 20th.
Saturday.
Sam Houston Park. And the walk is actually on Allen Parkway.
Allen Parkway.
Oh, okay. That's pretty.
And people come and bring, and they shut down that whole Allen Park. So if you're mad because you can't exit Allen Parkway.
You deserve
Parkway,
it. No, I'm just kidding.
And yes. Join us.
Yes.
And then you won't have to be mad. You'll be a part of why it's shut down.
Exactly.
But if you want to call us and you're looking for help, we're NAMI, N-A-M-I, GreaterHouston.org. www.namigreaterhouston.org. That's our website. That's where you sign up.
Is there a phone number?
Yes. And the phone number is 713-970-4419. 713-970-4419. We are located in the local mental health authority. If you don't have insurance, if you're underinsured, in Harris County, it's the Harris Center. In Fort Bend County, it's Texana. In Montgomery County, it's Tri-County Services. But people do care. If you need help, people are looking for you. And if you need support, NAMI's there.
Love it. Thank you so much for sharing all this information with
thank
us.
You.
And hopefully we'll see you again.
Yes.
No, we will see you again.
In your shoes.
Yes. On the 20th.
Yes.
Allen Parkway.
Parkway. Allen
yes.
Parkway.
Yes, yes. Thank you again for listening to Chai Time. And we hope to see you same time, same place next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you.